capsaicin can be particularly useful during times when feed intake is sort of unable to meet the demands. You know, the energy and nutrient deficiency is there. And so the sort of two key times that you could say it can be preempted in a dairy cow, but also, two key times that have been studied also a lot are the benefits of feeding the product during the fresh period, when the cows risk being in a negative energy balance, and also when the cows are experiencing heat stress.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai. AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Did you know that beta-carotene deficiency can affect reproductive performance and colostrum quality? Victus Transition from DSM Firmenich can boost beta-carotene levels to help your cattle fertility rates. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com. Agrarian Solutions, research-backed microbial solutions for healthier, higher-performing livestock. AgriComfort, the cow comfort specialist, because her longevity is your legacy.
Hello, welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University, and today I'm pleased to welcome to the show Holly Malins. Holly is the ruminant business manager from Avonic Animal Nutrition. Thanks for joining today, Holly.
Thanks for having me, Barry. Do appreciate it.
Where are you joining us from today?
So from one of my many locations in Bicester in North Oxfordshire, England. Surprisingly sunny outside. I know what you North Americans think about British weather, that it's raining all the time. But it's a lovely day, and I'm very grateful to actually be at my family's farm today, as it was the best location with the best infrastructure that I needed for the podcast today.
Oh, good. Well, I hope you get a chance to get outside and enjoy some of the last sun of the day before this is all said and done. Tell us a little bit about, you said you're at the family farm. Did you grow up there? How did you get into agriculture?
Yeah, so we have beef, dairy and crops here. And I have two sisters who were never very interested in the farm. So I was always the token son, as my dad likes to call me. Always involved with different aspects. As soon as I was allowed, I was on the tractor. And as soon as it was safe enough, I was milking the cows by myself. But it's really nice to have grown up with that and to have experienced the farm that we have, which one North American professor once described as being very 1950s, because it's anything that's a beef heifer or a beef bull goes into our beef system. But we basically only use our dairy heifers for the dairy, and then everything else is somehow feeding into the beef system. We grow our own barley that goes into the beef. We grow all of our own forages, things like that. So a little bit old fashioned in a way. So it's nice now being in the role that I am with Avonic, seeing as a sort of business manager, seeing farms around Northern and Western Europe, particularly, and other parts of Europe actually that have different ways of doing things and different advancements, different technologies. So it's always really wonderful to exchange with those kinds of farmers, and hopefully I teach them a bit and they teach me something, and always coming home with tips and tricks and ideas that may or may not get implemented or given the time of day by my dad. But I think there's so much going on now in this world of agriculture. So there's so many nice things to learn from.
Absolutely. And then I'm curious, so you grew up around ruminants, but after your bachelor's degree, I see that you did a master's in applied poultry production. Tell me a little bit about that, and then maybe especially are there a couple things that you thought, oh, wow, this is an interesting idea that maybe people in the ruminant space should think about more?
Certainly when I started with Avonic back in 2013, I had a lot of the bulk of my activity was monogastrics and a lot of poultry stuff. So that topic is maybe lacking slightly in UK agriculture bachelor's degrees, which is why I decided to do the master's to really sort of fill in the gaps of things that I'm missing. But as Evonik, we're a specialty chemicals company, but we're sort of primarily in our animal activities, we're a lot of amino acids, particularly methionine. So a lot of the work that I did sort of with the monogastric and poultry side was in amino acids. And even though I appreciate in the US, you know, you guys use use amino acids, especially methionine, lysine, extensively in ruminant production. That's something that's still developing quite a lot in the European ruminant market. So since I sort of the last couple of years, I swapped from a more mixed species background to more focused on ruminants, and certainly just the fundamentals of amino acid nutrition has been something very useful to bring with me into the work I'm doing with ruminant customers now.
And so tell me briefly, if you would, like, what does it mean to be the ruminant business manager for Evonik?
Good question. It's very satisfying personally, as I said, because I get to go and see this range of, you know, high-tech agriculture, and it's often, you know, high-producing herds and things like that. But it's because there's so much development and onboarding still needed in the European market. It's a really satisfying job role to have, because you know, there's so many tweaks and improvements that we can make with customers that just really nice to be able to see bringing into action. And you know, then you get the report back of, you know, I was feeding methionine for milk production, and then you know, actually 6 months later we've realized there's benefits to repro and things like that. So it can be a really nice nice when you get the added bonus that people weren't looking for, even though you mentioned it to them initially. It's a nice job to have.
Evonik is committed to help supply a growing world population with healthy and affordable animal protein while prioritizing animal welfare, the efficient use of natural resources, and food safety. Evonik's expertise in low-protein diets and supplemental amino acids help ruminant farmers around the globe to enhance feed efficiency, reduce costs, improve animal health, and lower greenhouse gas and nitrogen emissions.
Well, I think our main topic today is going to be on, a dietary tool that would be pretty new in the U.S. market. Maybe this is one where Europe would be more familiar with this than North America. But we're going to talk a little bit about capsaicinoids. And at the end of the episode, everybody that's listening has to be able to spell that. Right? So can you start us off with what the heck are capsaicinoids?
Yes. Pronunciation also has been a mystery for me. I mean, I even get asked, is it amino acids or amino acids, which may be just a regional dialect. But yeah, is it capsaicinoids, capsaicinoids, capsin, capsaicin? I wouldn't say it's left me guessing, but we know what we're referring to, right?
You're right.
As a start, the capsaicinoids are a group of amides produced by plants in the genus Capsicum. So this is particularly chili peppers, bell peppers, I would say the pepper family, but that was a misunderstanding on Columbus's part, I think, when they first discovered them in South America. So, but capsaicinoids are found in primarily, we would say, chilies. And this is also capsaicinoids we associate with creating this sort of spicy taste and a bit of a burning sensation when consumed. And I do appreciate your North American listeners are probably wondering what someone from England with our nation's culinary reputation is doing talking about exotic chili peppers, seeing as we're not entirely well known for our spicy foods. But please don't hold that against me. I like to think that my spice tolerance isn't horrendous. but the capsaicin compound is part of the group of capsaicinoids, is the most famous, most well-known, I think, compound, because capsaicin is found, it's the most abundant occurring capsaicinoid, and it's very potent. So it's the spicy one, basically. And chili plants sort of likely developed these compounds as part of a protection method, really to stop themselves being eaten by mammals, because they want birds to eat them, right? Any plant that has seeds that need to be spread around the place, you want birds to come in and eat the seeds. So the chilies developed the seeds themselves to not be spicy, not to contain the capsaicin, But the real concentrated capsaicin, the real spice in the chili, is found in the white pith, where the seeds attach to the plant. And so, yeah, this is the intention there with the chili plant developing this, to stop them, the plant being crunched up, with the hope that any animal with teeth that could crunch through the seeds as well would spit it out due to the spice before they destroy its potential for reproduction entirely. But yeah, so it's spice is the theme of this discussion today. Are you a fan of spicy food, Barry?
Yes, and actually, I was always like following recipes. They always say, like, you know, include the seeds from the pepper if you want it to be hotter. But it's not actually the seed; it's just what's holding the seed.
Right.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think especially if you're whenever you're cooking, okay, you have to be careful not to touch your eyes and things, but yeah. having the right parts of the chili in there to get your heat versus your flavor is important. And yeah, for anyone cooking or, you know, hot sauce fans or whatever, maybe you've probably heard of the Scoville scale as a way of measuring the spice in chilies and you know, measuring how spicy something is. And that's actually a measurement of the capsaicinoid concentration in chilies. So it was the Scoville scale was invented by Wilbur Scoville in the early 1900s in the US. And it was initially like a sensory test with a sensory panel evaluating the spice levels of these different chilies. But as of the 1980s, this has changed to a quantitative measurement using HPLC, where the actual content of capsaicinoids are measured. And so, I mean, the California Reaper is the danger chili, but some people like them.
That's beyond my range, but yeah, I've heard of that.
Absolutely. So that's got a Scoville heat units of about 1.5 to 2.5 million, depending on sort of where it's grown and, you know, climate conditions like that. Whereas the humble jalapeno has 2,500 to 10,000 Scoville heat units. So, you know, we know that the California Reaper is crazy hot, and the jalapeno is hot, but not too bad. That's a big difference in their units. And I'm a big fan of buffalo wings, I must say. So I was disappointed to learn during my fact finding for this podcast that my favorite buffalo sauce is actually only a 200 on the Scoville heat unit. And I thought, okay, I need to train myself better. I need to up my game.
So this is super interesting, right, from a cooking standpoint or whatever, but we're probably not like trying to get cows into like South American Mexican food, right? So like, what's the point of talking about this with ruminants? What does capsaicin do other than heat flavor, I guess?
Yeah, no, pre-marinated short ribs is not the...
Right.
So the capsaicin itself, for the chili plant, it has some actions like it's an antifungal and insecticidal, so it can really protect the chili plant. But once it's ingested, there's a couple of effects, and I'd say the main one is an activation of it's the TRPV1 receptor, whose full name is the transient receptor potential vanilloid 1, also called the capsaicin receptor, but for time and because it's less of a mouthful, I'll just call it the TRPV1 receptor for the rest of this bit. But these receptors are present all along the gastrointestinal tract, mostly in the small intestine. As we said, the TRPV1 receptor is also called the capsaicin receptor. So one way of switching it on is with the presence of capsaicin. Another is heat, when heat above 43 degrees Celsius or 109 Fahrenheit, which if your cow has a body temperature around there, think it's going to be dead. So maybe not so much an issue, but and also low pHs below 5.9 trigger the activation of this receptor. But for us, mainly this is the effect that capsaicin is having, activating this receptor, it can basically it stimulates the secretion of a small protein called calcitonin gene-related peptide. And this CGRP protein is able to inhibit insulin secretion from the pancreas. By inhibiting the insulin secretion, there is more glucose than available for the mammary gland and for other insulin independent tissues. But with that idea of, you know, more glucose for the mammary gland is always a good thing. Other impacts beyond this sort of TRPV1 insulin effect are that there is sort of enhanced chemical digestive stimulation. This is studies done in mammalian and poultry species. But by feeding capsaicin to these animals, they measured an increase in bile production from the liver and then also an increase in the production of enzymes from the pancreas and intestines. So that was especially protease and amylase. Enhanced chemical digestion is part of an improvement of nutrient digestion and absorption. And the real absorption part, sorry, comes from studies that also looked at found an increase in the membrane fluidity of the intestinal brush borders, as well as an increase in activity of the intestinal membrane-bound enzymes, and also an increase in the microvilli length. These sort of three aspects really help to improve the nutrient absorption by improving the interactive surface for nutrients to enter the body. There's a couple of actions going on through the intestinal system to help help onboarding nutrients that are available in the feed. I'd say the three main actions that we'd like to talk about with the capsaicin.
It's fascinating.
When cows face inflammatory pressure, every moment counts. Introducing the new AHV Aspie formula, developed to support a faster recovery and help cows stay on track during challenging periods. By supporting the cow's natural response, Aspie helps maintain health, performance, and resilience when it matters most. Discover the new Aspie formula and see the difference for your herd. Contact AHV today. Adiseo, a global leader in nutritional solutions and the provider of SmartAmine M, the best-in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production, capture more value from their components, and maintain the lifetime performance of their herds. For more product information and to calculate your return on investment when you balance your feed with amino acids, go to milkpay.com.
Is it true that this TRPV1 receptor is the same receptor that's like in on the tongue or in the mouth that senses the capsaicin there?
I believe so. I'm not an expert, but I know that these sensors are found throughout the gastrointestinal tract. So it's and they are all connected. So it makes sense that even receiving the heat the capsaicin in the mouth then is also helping to start trigger the effect. Because they're sort of all talking to each other and switching on this activation.
I remember that was a kind of an interesting discovery. Maybe 20 years ago, they started to find all these taste receptors for different types of chemicals throughout the gut too, right? So, and we don't really have the sensation of tasting things throughout the digestive tract. So that kind of started this whole process of understanding, well, what are some of these things doing other than helping us taste things, right?
Right.
Yeah. You laid out some interesting biology there, potentially improving digestion. As you said, maybe some effects on nutrient partitioning by perhaps slightly decreasing insulin secretion, that sort of thing. Let's put this in the perspective of an operating dairy farm then. So what are the potential uses of this? Like, are you trying to solve a specific problem, or what exactly is the, I guess, the pitch?
Yeah, no, good point, because it's nice to know how these things work, but what does it mean if it doesn't make any difference? So knowing that as you say, there's this nutrient partitioning and enhancement of digestion. It's particularly capsaicin can be particularly useful during times when feed intake is sort of unable to meet the demands. You know, the energy and nutrient deficiency is there. And so the sort of two key times that you could say it can be preempted in a dairy cow, but also, two key times that have been studied also a lot are the benefits of feeding the product during the fresh period, when the cows risk being in a negative energy balance, and also when the cows are experiencing heat stress. For the early lactation period, of course, we know there's a lot of problems when the cows enter a negative energy balance due to the low feed intake and issues with liver function, excessive fats, fat mobilization, compounding effects onto immune function because of that. It's not good. So if the capsaicin can help to enhance the digestion of the feed, and to improve the glucose utilization, then we would hope it would stop the cow from entering a negative energy balance, having the consequential issues, but also then helping it to produce more milk and achieve those achieve what it could do, and especially in the heat stress period, also feed intake's dropped. Cows are not able to receive the energy and nutrients that they would need to work optimally. So being able to do more with the smaller amount of feed that they've got would really help. The UK, I know, is not the first place when people think of when we think of heat stress. As I said, it's a nice sunny day today. We in the UK even are starting to experience more heat stress and understand understand how easily it sneaks in. Okay, we're a rainy country allegedly, but it does get very hot and humid here in the summer. So it's important that everyone is able to have the full repertoire of options to mediate heat stress, and of course fans and misting and sort of physical cooling factors are a big part of it. But knowing that there's something like chili, which I guess you wouldn't have thought as being something that would help, can actually help to mediate the impact of heat stress is pretty cool. The that improved glucose metabolism, both during early lactation and heat stress, can have quite a dramatic effect on the milk production in the end. And some trials showed where, an additional 1 to 2 kilos or, 2 to 4.5 pounds of milk could even be generated just by feeding capsaicin. And that was on cows already doing 30 to 35 kilos or 65 to 77 pounds ish. So it's certainly an important aspect that can help. There's a lot of products out there, but the main thing is having a consistent dose of capsaicin to the cow, there's not a dose response, let's say. So you can feed a lot more of the capsaicin, and it won't necessarily always increase the milk production. But it's more interesting maybe to know that under the same dose of capsaicin will have a different effect on yield, whether the cow is in severe heat stress or moderate heat stress. So the severe heat stress cows would generate more milk when you feed the same amount of capsaicin to a moderate heat stress cow.
Well, one other quick question, that is kind of interesting thing that Evonik would have to deal with in this case is, you mentioned that even if you use a consistent sort of genetic line of peppers, depending on the conditions in a given year and a given place, the concentration of these compounds can vary quite a bit. So, in producing a product for, say, all that, you want to say is consistent, how is that dealt with?
Yeah, no, good question. So there's a variety of products on the market, and some are pure capsaicin. So they're, there's a lot of chemical involvement going into making them, also enzymatic production even for the some of them. So those products, because they're, let's say, more industrial, I think they come sort of with that as being slightly more consistent. Of course, if you grow a pepper and you just grind it and feed it, or dry it, grind it and feed it, then it's going to have a risk of inconsistency with the capsaicin. But certainly in our case, we're measuring always the capsaicin content in the chilies, so that you can basically offset or blend different mixes together to make sure that you keep that consistency, because it is, with any product, consistency of use is important. As it's nice, like, you know, it's nice that we're able to have a natural product, if you will, that's using the whole chili, but having steps in place to improve and ensure that it's a consistent one is very important.
Fascinating. All right. And is this, the product that you're talking about specifically, I don't think we've mentioned the name of it. And then is it available worldwide now, or how do people look into this?
Good question. So our product is called Borocare Capsin, and it is currently available in Europe, Middle East, Africa, but I believe it's not available in the US yet.
Okay.
So, and I think when this podcast drops, it hopefully won't be too soon, too long. Speak to your local Evonik person or Evonik distributor to see if they can update you.
Okay, excellent.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Want a herd management software designed for you? BovaSync is helping herds by managing data faster and easier. Contact BovaSync today to learn more. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Accurately measure individual cow feed efficiency with the newest advancement from AffiMilk. Visit AffiMilk.com to learn more. That's AffiMilk.com. Evonik Animal Nutrition, sciencing the global food challenges. Cow Manager, ahead of the herd together. Support faster recovery when cows face inflammatory pressure. Contact AHV to discover the new Aspie formula. Reduce dyscalcemia and simplify transition cow care with Cowbell Pro from Chemlock Nutrition. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Rangin Livestock Nutrition. We partner with a purpose. Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
Well, we've got our three famous questions that we've got to put to you, so let's dive into those. First of all, what's your favorite dairy-related book or resource?
Yeah, that was a hard one, because I think there's, you know, things like the Journal of Dairy Science are fantastic, frequently receiving publications with the latest research. I don't want to give all the credit to the US. No, in the UK, we're very lucky to have our National Ag Board, AHDB, the Agriculture and Horticultural Board, a development board, where they are, they have a knowledge library. They carry out a lot of, farm trial work and publish industry relevant advancements, as well as advisory strategies and things, based on government and academic suggestions and regulations. So, I think that's a pretty good one for us when it comes to, being able to play by the rules in all the countries that you operate in. It's important to know the local advisements and regulations.
So AHDB Knowledge Hub, is it?
Knowledge Library, yeah.
Knowledge Library, okay. All right, what about your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
Yeah, and so this, as I'd mentioned to you in the beginning, as I'm currently about 6 months pregnant, I have just had baby books on the go. sure. So I just wanted to mention my favorite, which is, it's called Expecting Better by Emily Oster. And she's a professor of economics at Brown. So she's not what you would expect from a baby book, I think, but she discusses like a data-driven approach to deciding, making decisions in pregnancy and in parenting. And, you know, somebody working in science and wanting to know the data behind what's influencing these this advice, then it's been really good, really useful for me to reassure me. And, you know, I'm only allowed one tuna fish sandwich a week, but, you know, I know why. So rather than just being told, stay away from tuna. So there's all kinds of crazy recommendations I found during pregnancy, but...
Many not based in much of anything, I suppose.
In some cases, yes.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay. I can't say we've gotten that recommendation before. So you added, you chalked up a new one. Good job. And then last question, in your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
Yeah, it's such a good question. So I really thought that because we are, you know, dairy is such a scientific industry, you know, topics advancing all the time and developing innovations and all sorts of things, that the to have adaptability and like continuous learning, I think, is always the most important thing that you see in successful dairy professionals, because, you know, it doesn't take long to get left behind. It also really winds me up when I speak to people outside of agriculture who are amazed to learn how technical it is and that we have robots, you know, but it's when you're within the industry, I think, you see how fast it moves, and you know, regulations are changing. And so whether the regulations are coming from a government, local government, or milk processors, you know, the farmers and advisors need to be keeping abreast of these things and just help stay on top of things and be profitable and legal. So, yeah.
Well, Holly, this has been a fun conversation. Thanks so much for joining on the Dairy Podcast Show today.
Thanks for having me, Barry. I appreciate it.
Again, our guest today has been Holly Malins, the ruminant business manager from Evonik Animal Nutrition. And the Dairy Podcast Show is brought to you by Wisenetics. If you haven't followed the show or liked it yet, make sure you hit the button so you don't miss the next episode. And we hope to see you then.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.